Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through the underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. In 2015, the National Association of Home Builders and Wells Fargo Housing Opportunity Index reported that San Luis Obispo was the fourth least affordable housing market in most regions of similar population size, placing it at the lowest end of the affordability scale in small markets. While housing is generally considered affordable when household pays no more than 30% of its monthly income to housing costs, Central Coast is sorely lacking in these options. Not only does the shortage of affordable housing cause hardships and distress on individuals and families as they struggle to meet their own basic needs, it also impacts local companies and organizations as they try to recruit qualified employees. My guest today are local authorities about the housing market, its challenges, possible solutions, and are here to share some of their thoughts on this subject. I'm joined by Jerry Ryu, who is the executive director of the San Luis Obispo Housing Trust Fund, and Jeff Eccles, who is the executive director of the Home Builders Association of the Central Coast. In today's show, we'll be talking about this topic, and we invite you to call us and share your conversation with us. Comments or questions are welcome. You can do that by calling us at 781-3875. And welcome to both of you gentlemen.
It's great to be here.
Thank you very much.
The two organizations that you represent, I have a sense they work together, but they do different functions, correct?
Yeah, so my name is Jeff Eccles. I'm the executive director of the Home Builders Association, and we represent over 100 different builders and associate members here on the Central Coast, both in San Luis Obispo County as well as Santa Barbara County.
Okay.
So that includes the developers as well as affiliated industries, engineers, planners, architects, even bankers and printers. So we are a trade organization. We're a 501c6, and our specific charge is to represent and advocate for the building industry here on the Central Coast.
Okay. And Jerry?
I'm Jerry Ryu, the director of the San Luis Obispo County Housing Trust Fund. The Housing Trust Fund is a nonprofit 501c3 corporation. We're a private lender, and we provide technical assistance to support affordable housing. By affordable housing, we mean a very broad group of housing, everything from housing for the homeless through what would normally be middle-class housing that just isn't supported in our local market.
Okay, and the two of you and your organizations work collaboratively because obviously this is something that is not only an issue for builders and anybody involved in the trade of construction and housing, but also obviously for affordability. The trust part of the name of your organization, Jerry, how does that come into play?
It's just a type of organization that we are. There are housing trust funds across the country, and we just follow that name.
So I read, at the intro some statistics about the availability, the affordability. I think we've heard a lot about the challenges that people have in various areas of the county. What's your overall assessment, Jerry, looking at it from your perspective?
Well, housing is not affordable throughout the county. There are some areas of the county that are less unaffordable than others, and some that are extremely unaffordable. If we're looking at retirees on a fixed income, if they didn't own and pay off their home years ago, they can't afford to live here. If we're looking at people who earn minimum wage up to $15 an hour, they can't afford to pay market rent. If they get rental subsidies, they can't find an apartment landlord who will accept Section 8. If we're looking at young professionals who want to buy a home, it's not going to be here. So we've got a problem pretty much across the spectrum.
So in terms of supply and being able to provide that to people mm-hmm. to access, you're really looking at it. Is it a crisis?
I say so all the time.
Yeah. And how about for Jeff, from the perspective of the people that you represent in your organization, how do you see the situation of housing in both counties?
So we see it as a crisis as well. The numbers give evidence to that. So mm-hmm. really, mm-hmm. I think anyone that claims that it's not a crisis hasn't really looked at the empirical data, the numbers, for instance, the affordability index that you cited earlier. You mentioned earlier, too, Chris, working the two organizations working mm-hmm. together. So we do represent mostly for-profit builders, but we also represent nonprofit builders as well. People's Self-Help Builder is in our association, and we work closely with them. And we feel very strongly that the housing situation is comprised of a continuum, meaning from somebody that is just getting in their very, very first home, whether that's a renter or somebody, even someone coming from a homeless situation, getting in that very first home, renting or buying, and then moving up, because our builders build for everyone that needs a roof over their head.
Right. And it's also a business for people as well, for the builders.
Certainly.
So there's a margin that needs to mm-hmm. happen as well, correct? Mm-hmm. And Jerry, you and I were talking before we came on air today about how the recession actually made the homes more affordable, but not necessarily that people could afford them because they may have lost their jobs mm-hmm. or they may have not been willing to take a risk. Or
housing was more affordable right after the recession. But during that period, fewer people could qualify for a mortgage. Like you say, more people were unemployed. And so only some people could take advantage of the improvements in the cost of housing. Today, financing is more accessible, but the prices are quite a bit higher.
You know, if you were to land on, Jeff, some of the key major challenges in the housing market, what would you say are at the top of your list?
So it's interesting to follow up just briefly on the recession scenario.
Yeah.
Houses were more affordable then, but what it also did was put a constraint on supply, meaning mm-hmm. that
right.
Essentially,
there were none being built.
Yeah, there was almost zero building going on during that time
period.
They
were mainly short sales, and if they were available, there were short sales, or people just generally couldn't afford the payments anymore.
Right, and new construction was just about non-existent. So mm-hmm. what it did is it mm-hmm. spring-loaded the situation moving forward for unaffordability, because now that the demand and incomes have recovered, we don't have the supply, and we've actually been adding much less supply, for instance, over the last few years than were done prior. So even though we're out of the recession and the home builders are building again, not at anywhere near the levels that they were before. Now, to answer your question on why that might be, there are several constraints. One, we have local natural constraints here. We just don't have a whole lot of land. So land prices have gone up dramatically over the last 4 or 5 decades. And not just here, but in all of California, but particularly here because of some of our policies. And that would move on to the next item is our political policies. We are in a slow growth and sometimes no growth region here. That's what we've chosen as a community. So when we constrain the supply like that, it's inevitable when you look at the supply-demand equation and economics that prices will go up. So we have to figure out a way that we can continue to manage this growth. For instance, we're still encouraging job creation here. I haven't heard anyone come out and say, well, we don't want to create any more jobs here. But, you know, if we're not providing housing for our employees, we have to balance that equation out. So I think we have to look at our public policies and what they are doing to constrain the supply as well.
Okay. And Jerry, if I can ask the same question for you.
Boy, I agree with everything that Jeff said. And I'd like to add that when you can only build, let's say, 100 homes a year, those are damn well going to be expensive large homes because it's the only way to make a profit.
Right, if you're a builder. Yeah, or investing in it.
If you could build 1,000 homes, then you'd have a mixture because the market would demand the mixture. But if it's only a very small number, you build at the high end. The other problem, including after land, is infrastructure. We don't have water or sewer or other infrastructure to support more development, and whether it's employment centers or housing, we're way behind on the infrastructure.
And so water, you mentioned, is an infrastructure, and with the drought, that certainly become more impacted. If that hadn't happened, would that still have been a constraint?
Oh, yes. Yeah, very much. I think so. It went from bad to worse.
Yeah.
And we have gone through droughts in the past, and they always – we recover. But we haven't invested what we need to invest to ensure that there is an adequate supply of water throughout the county, regardless of the drought circumstances.
We've you know, and this probably is a little bit off topic, but the thing that popped into my head, too, that has been a big change that we've had as we've gone through the years. I was mentioning before we came on air, I've been here since 1978. And so there's always been this in certain cities, this managed, we're going to manage the growth. We're going to keep the permits to a certain number. We're going to contain it. But what has been a vast change within the county has been the number of, for instance, wineries that have come up that, you know, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of them that have come up that while they're not big growth for homes and spread out thousands homes, they are, in fact, large uses of land and water. Is there some plan, some way of looking at those things that's happening somewhere?
I think there's a lot of planning that's going on. And with regard to water, I would like to focus particularly on the city of San Luis Obispo because they have done an excellent job over the last really couple of decades of planning for their water needs. And I'll give you an example. For instance, for future growth, which in the general plan of San Luis Obispo, they've limited to 1% per year. So we don't have runaway growth occurring within the city of San Luis Obispo.
Right.
We have already identified the water resources, including that additional growth. So San Luis Obispo really, when looked at regionally and on a statewide basis, is one of the most water-secure communities around. Especially because they're not entirely dependent on one particular source, the State Water Project. And we're not drilling right now in San Luis Obispo as well. We're not taking any water out of the ground. We get it from the reservoirs and a good diversified source of that. So water is an issue, something that we in the home building industry are quick to point out as well when it comes to water. For instance, Chris, you mentioned that you moved here in 1978.
Yeah.
So that house that you moved into at that time, or apartment, was very inefficient in terms of water use. The houses that we build today use literally half as much water as that very first place that you moved into when you moved into the county.
And
here.
Is that part of the plan when applying for the permit? You need to demonstrate that as a builder?
Yes and no. This has been development over the last several decades within the building industry. So California, as you know, is a very environmentally aware state.
Right.
So we have worked with our legislators every year as we move along to make homes more efficient, more water efficient and electricity efficient. And then at the same time, the laws and regulations have kind of kept up with that and required those levels of efficiency. So it's actually been good collaboration. Sometimes it's a little bit push from Sacramento, and then other times the private sector is coming up with innovation that actually pulls. So it has worked out to where and I say it somewhat facetiously, but we could solve the water problem if we got rid of, say, the bottom 25% of housing stock, the oldest housing stock in our communities, and made those brand new houses that have the efficiencies of a modern built home.
I've never heard that before, so that's an interesting point of view.
Actually, in some communities, groups have been retrofitting older homes to reduce their water usage.
Right.
Newer toilets, shower heads, faucets can reduce the water usage in existing older homes by quite a bit.
Yeah. And that is going on and being really encouraged. Mm-hmm. Is the city of San Luis Obispo or different cities in the county, are they taking advantage of that?
Yes, particularly in North County, for instance, we have required offsets because of the aquifer situation up there. So if there's a new home being built, the developer is required to offset the water used in that home. And the way they do that is they pay into what's called an in-lieu fund, where a fund that then goes out and pays for those retrofits in existing structures. So sometimes people will get upset when they see new development occurring in a drought scenario, but I can promise you and the listeners that building is not going on unfettered and unplanned for in terms of the precious resource of water.
So actually what you're saying is that when this new building is going forward, it may actually balance out as like a zero increase use because you're retrofitting existing structures through the in-lieu fund.
Absolutely. Correct? That's what the offset program is designed to do.
And then you're also bringing in new homes that are providing new structures, but there is not an increase in water that existed more than was before, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Interesting. Interesting. If you just joined us, you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your public radio station. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Our topic for today's show is there a crisis of affordable housing on the Central Coast? And I think we've already answered that. So we can move forward with the rest of our show. My guest is Jerry Ryu, who is the executive director of the San Luis Obispo Housing Trust Fund, and Jeff Eccles, who is the executive director of the Home Builders Association of the Central Coast. They're here to share with some of their thoughts, and you're also invited to join us with your thoughts, questions, or suggestions. Please call us at 805-781-3875, and you can bring your voice to the discussion today. Again, that's 781-3875. So where do you gentlemen differ in terms of how you see either the issues or the solutions? I'll just cut to the chase on that. I figure I'll put you on the spot here.
Well, I think Jeff believes in more of a market approach, that if a builder needs to do certain things to meet requirements, they'll figure a way to do it, and that's the best way to go. I believe that they need more nudging from the government requirements that they include some affordable housing, but the government has to give them a lot of incentives and benefits for doing that.
Jerry, in a perfect world, if you were to set up a structure about how you would incentivize the builders to be able to build affordable housing within the structure of their developments, what would that look like?
Boy, good. Well, the first thing is that local governments need to give density bonuses at least equal or greater than the number of affordable units
that get
built.
Explain what a density bonus is.
So if a certain piece of land is zoned to allow 12 units, if they include affordable units, perhaps they would be allowed to build 15 homes rather than 12. That's a minimum. Something could be done with the fees. I think that most communities now have a one-size-fits-all if you're going to build a small apartment or you're going to build a large single-family home. You pay similar fees. And I think they need to look at how the new housing impacts the need for the facilities that result in the fees and adjust the fees so that smaller units with fewer bedrooms pay less fees. And it would be proportionate to the demand that the occupants would place on the infrastructure.
So if I built a home that's 10,000 square feet or I built a home that's 2,000 square feet, the infrastructure fees would be the same right
Pretty
now?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, many of the fees
wow.
are the
them.
Same, so they're not proportionate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, that your building permit will be much higher on the larger homes.
Larger homes.
But the water fee, the sewer fee, mm-hmm. the road fee, the park fees, and I think someone went down a list of 31 different fees that a builder typically pays in this county. It's pretty mind-boggling.
Are we an unusual county in that?
No.
Okay, we're not.
Although California is unusual as a state in that. And that's a big part of the discussion that you just had is a big part of what is contributing to the unaffordability okay. and this housing crisis that we're beginning to experience.
Yeah. What else, Jerry? I'm going to let you finish your thoughts.
More flexibility with the zoning so that you could build single-family homes and some small apartments in the same development.
And right now you couldn't?
Sometimes you can't.
Okay.
So it would be in some areas a builder may build a single-family subdivision but then have some apartments, smaller apartments, on the edge of the development or adjacent to the more major streets, and that they'd be done together. Here you might have to do a specific plan to get approval to do that. The city of San Luis Obispo does a lot of specific plans that mixes housing like that. I think it's less common in the other communities.
Okay, Jeff, I'm going to have you respond, but let's take a call from Phil here. Phil, are you there?
Phil?
Hello?
Yeah, this is Phil.
Hi, Phil. Did you have a question or comment?
Yeah. I'm mixed about the wineries. Do they use a lot of water or not? Because the rich people are using the wine that is they were using real estate before, it's a write-off. And what I'm concerned is, are the wineries using no water, because this is what everybody says, or they use water and do not tell us? I'm going to take my phone call off the air, okay?
Okay, Phil, thank you.
So just looking at water use in general, agriculture is the major user of water both locally and in the state. When we look at the statewide numbers, there are three big users. There is, number one, agricultural, mm-hmm. and then two, environmental, and then three, what we call urban, which includes residential. So the ag is 40%, and then the environmental is about 30%. 30 to 40%.
And when you're talking environmental, you're talking about?
Water that we're not capturing, but
okay.
we're allowing to go out to the delta streams and
out.
Unfettered water. So
okay.
water that we've deemed that the environment needs.
Right.
And then the smallest component of all is the urban and residential use.
Okay.
And we've really done a good job of conservation with regard to the urban mm-hmm. use. Mm-hmm. So I think the winery question is a bigger question. It goes back to zoning and how much more we want to allow agricultural users to draw from mm-hmm. the aquifer, and how we balance that versus the residential and environmental needs.
And are there, you know, and are the two entities working together in putting some kind of a structure together and balancing? For instance, you're saying in building, you are trying to build in a structure that if you're going to increase the number of units, you're also looking at how you decrease the utilization of some of those services like water, right? Well, is that also happening?
In our county and many counties, there's a right to farm. And there's very little regulation over water use in agriculture.
In the agriculture side,
yeah. Agriculture, while a home may be required to have a lot of water-saving features, a winery may not.
Okay.
But again, I don't know the specifics of how much water the wineries are using.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would say that probably there's not enough of a regional approach to how we're going about that planning.
Yeah, that was my point. I'm wondering.
We're seeing more. For instance, the county supervisors in the last month or so, the last several months, have been doing some good regional work in South County. They were somewhat forced into it by some lawsuits as well, but they've been looking at regional solutions there, and now they're looking at even adding an additional emergency source through the desal plant out at Diablo. So that, I think, is a good regional look. In North County, we're being forced to look regional now with everything that has happened in that basin over the last couple of years and the what we refer to as SGMA, the State Groundwater Management Act. So we're being really forced now to look at it from a more regional standpoint. I think that's a good thing. That's one of the things that we try and bring to the table as an association, that as a trade group that represents everybody in the county, as a matter of fact, both counties. So the more regional the approach, generally, the better.
Yeah, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when you've got limited resources and you've got people tapping them from different interests, it makes sense to have some way of looking at it at one table.
Yes.
Yeah. So response to Jerry in terms of what he was suggesting in an ideal world would work. How does that kind of set with people in your organization are looking at it from the business end of it?
So I can tell you where we differ.
Yeah.
So in looking at affordable housing, which we refer to in the industry as inclusionary housing, because a developer, a for-profit developer, is required to include that component of affordable housing within a development. So we refer to it as inclusionary. The issue with us in the for-profit side is how is that paid for? And we believe that there need to be two criteria that should be met to make it a reasonable way to pay for it. One is that it is a broad-based mechanism. So when we look at things, for instance, that are more general in nature, it could even be general funds if we have the political will to do it, we think that's a better way to do it instead of putting it on the backs of the new homeowners in a new development. Because even though we say it's an inclusionary fee that charges the developers, and let's say 20% of that development has to be inclusionary or affordable housing, and the other 80% is market rate, well, how is the developer going to pay for that subsidy? How are they going to subsidize those 20%, those two out of 10 homes? Well, they're going to charge more on the other eight, the eight out of 10, to pay for it, to turn a profit. So it really falls down to then the back of the new home buyer, which then further reduces affordability. And now what we're seeing is an extreme lack of affordability for the middle class segment.
Which is where we are right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the first thing that I think needs to be looked at in terms of a viable mechanism to fund affordable housing is a broader base, not just on the backs of those 80%.
And how do you reach that?
Well, so Jerry can talk a little bit more about how the Housing Trust Fund does it. I think there's some great models there that come from broader pools of funding. And then the second thing is permanence. So if there's a more permanent way to find that funding, that is a much better ideal as well. Because really what we're doing now is when we put this tax or fee, an inclusionary fee on top of a development, we only get that fee when we're building.
Right.
So in the recession, and everybody in the business is well aware
of
this.
There
was no building going on. The inclusionary fees almost went away as well entirely.
Right.
So that's not a good way for long-term policy planning. That's not a good way to plan for growth. That's not a good way to solve, in our opinion, the affordable crisis. So if we can find mechanisms that have permanence, that are much broader based in nature, we would and in fact have supported those types of policies, both from the state level and the local level. With regard to things like density and zoning, I think we should be doing those things anyway. So what we're in a situation right now with the affordable housing policy is those things are held out as carrots kind of to help increase the profitability for that builder in other areas.
Explain what you're talking about when you're talking about density.
So the number of units per acre is the easiest way to look at it.
All right. And there are restrictions on the number that you
can
put. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. So, and that's in the general plan and the housing element. So within the general plan, it tells a developer, depending on the zoning of that particular area, how many units, how many homes they can have per acre.
Does it depend on the size of the home, or it's just how many units?
More on the units, on the number
Very
of dwellings.
Rarely on the size.
Yeah, more on the number of dwellings per acre.
Okay. So if you're allotted only a few units and a builder wanted to turn a profit, why wouldn't he build five really big units?
And that's what goes back to Jerry's point. Mm-hmm. So what the planners will do, what the municipalities will do, is they'll say, okay, in this zone you are allowed to build 8 units per acre.
Mm-hmm.
But if you meet these inclusionary requirements, we'll allow you to go up to, say, 12 units per acre. And the idea there is then that can increase the profitability for the builder that will then allow for that subsidy for the affordable housing.
And that's what you were proposing, mm-hmm. Jerry. And the inclusionary units then would be affordable units that would be smaller units that would be more middle income or more entry level.
Mm-hmm. Ideally.
Okay. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your public radio station, at 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 91.7 Salinas to Paso Robles, 89.5 Santa Barbara, and around the world at the web at kcbx.org. Central Coast rental properties are in such high demand right now that it is a significant challenge for anyone looking for rental, let alone affordable housing. For those hoping to rent in San Luis Obispo, the prospect is even grimmer. The average rent for a two-bedroom apartment in San Luis Obispo is just over $1,300 a month. And according to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, it takes an annual income of $52,360 to afford that $1,300 a month. According to the 2015 Vital Signs report published by Action for Healthy Communities, 33% of the residents in the county make less than $35,000 a year, and 58% live below an annual $65,000 a year income. My guests today are offering their thoughts about affordable housing here, the crisis, and some possible solutions. And they are Jerry Ryu, who is the executive director of San Luis Obispo Housing Trust Fund, and Jeff Eccles, the executive director of the Home Builders Association of the Central Coast. You're also invited to bring your voice into our discussion, and you can do so by calling us at 805-781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. So when you listen to those statistics, and mm-hmm. I didn't make those up, it's pretty astounding. I mean, we were looking before we came on air today, mm-hmm. and San Luis Obispo County and Santa Barbara County are actually two of the top unaffordable counties in the nation.
Yeah, actually in the world.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize it was in the world.
Yeah, that's the case.
I mean, it's a beautiful area, right? Yeah. But, you know, how do you...
In some ways, Los Angeles has a very similar problem with affordability. And most of L.A. is not nearly as beautiful as we are.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it goes back to the complaints that Jeff had about state policies, no growth throughout the state, and especially the coastal areas of the state. Until we build more housing, we're going to have affordability problems. Our county had the lowest rental vacancy rate in the whole state at a couple years ago. I don't have the current numbers.
And currently it's not any better.
Not much better.
No.
L.A. does too. San Jose does too. They were just slightly higher than ours when I looked at the numbers. And that means that we have a lot of people paying more than half of their income for rent.
Right.
And we also have a tremendous homeless problem.
Mm-hmm.
In 2013, we had twice as many people who were homeless as we had vacant rental units. So if we put every homeless person in a vacant rental unit, we'd still have homeless people.
You know, I when we talk about people that are homeless because they can't afford homes, I was sharing with Jerry that I have two people that I know as professionals who decided they wanted to move to this county from living in Northern California. And they opened their businesses here and found a place to lease their business space. But they wanted to live here in San Luis Obispo for obvious ease of access and not reducing their footprint and all of that. It took them 4 months to find rental housing. And during that time, they were having to live not knowing anybody in the area. There was nobody that they could couch surf with. So they were sleeping in a hotel and eventually ended up sleeping in their car and on the beach while they were looking for rental housing. These are professionals. These are not so, you know, the idea of who can't afford housing here, we really need to get out of that mindset if we've got that about these are, you know, these are a certain individual. They're all individuals. It's astounding. And we've got some phone calls here. Bill, is that did you have a question or comment?
Yes. I have a solution that might work that I've never heard anyone mention, and that is make it easier for people, you know, like in my situation where I live on acreage and I'm getting older and I need help, and make it easier for people to have travel trailers on acreage in the country.
Oh, great idea. What would prevent that, Jerry or Jeff?
Most communities have zoning requirements that preclude living in a trailer unless you're living there while you're building your home. I'm a big advocate for allowing RVs, park models, and other trailers to be used
in tiny homes,
mm-hmm. especially to be used as second units. The city of Fresno recently allowed that. They changed their zoning ordinance to allow tiny homes, which includes RVs and park models, to be used as second homes.
Is our county looking at any kind of change to those ordinances, given the fact that
I've proposed it a number of times, and they've basically said that the response I get was basically, oh, you can't do that.
Because they won't change it?
They're questions about jurisdiction.
And they want to keep the riffraff out.
Yeah.
Well, and to be fair to staff, to the folks in the planning department, you know, they've got their set of ordinances on the books that they have to follow.
Sure.
This goes back to what we talked about earlier, which is political will. The mm-hmm. political will of we as a community,
right.
And then specifically our policymakers, the folks that we put in office. So I believe that I mean, it's starting to be talked about more. Mm-hmm. There are communities in California, as you just mentioned, particularly in the Central Valley, Fresno, that are looking at things like the tiny homes
right.
and changing the ordinances, things like secondary units and
right.
allowing those secondary or granny units to occur on, mm-hmm. on certain properties.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is, because we've entered this crisis stage, we are going to have to summons that political will and start looking at those creative solutions. So something like Bill is bringing up, I think, is something that we do need to look at. Now, we do have to be careful with acreage, though, I'll tell you, Bill, because one of the things that happens is when we go out to where the acreage is, we might be contributing to more urban sprawl, meaning where do those folks work? They're not necessarily working there on that acreage. More than likely, they're going to be working at a service job in the city of San Luis Obispo or in Paso.
Mm-hmm.
And that means they're going to be on the highway creating those vehicle miles driven every day.
Right, right. Thank you, Bill. Good suggestion. And I think the answer from Jeff and from Jerry is that in order to move anything like that, the political will is that people need to get behind looking mm-hmm. at some creative solutions that are a little bit outside the box. And not give up on when it's not moving forward quickly enough.
One thing I might add to that is that it's really hard to find labor because no one can afford to live on $15 or $20 an hour that I can pay and live and pay $1,000 a month rent in town somewhere.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And you're prohibited from putting them on your property?
Pretty much.
Huh.
In most areas of the county, you can build a second unit, and that could be a mobile home, but it would be fairly expensive. You'd be paying all the impact fees, water, sewer, roads, parks, etc., and it would be prohibitive.
So in the rezoning, it would also have to look at those impact fees mm-hmm. that would be charged for putting on tiny homes or those other units. Wouldn't make sense to have them be the same fees for building another unit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's interesting that
what's the difference between a travel trailer and a teeny tiny home, except they sound better?
Yeah. Actually, most tiny homes are built to the travel trailer codes.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of difference.
Yeah, if they're on wheels. If they're built on the ground, then they're subject to the regular building code.
Now we mentioned, too, from Bill's comments, it brought up the impact fees again.
Right.
And I want to point out that there are many places in the country that don't have any impact fees at all. And even here, we didn't used to have impact fees. So we're in a situation now where it even places an individual like Bill in a situation that makes it untenable to add living
right.
space on his property because of those impact
right.
fees. So I suppose my message is it doesn't necessarily have to be that way.
Well, and the mm-hmm. impact fees are determined by the county?
No, by the particular jurisdiction.
By
that individual city, or if in the county, then the county.
Then the county.
And there are also water districts, sewer districts,
right.
mosquito abatement districts.
I didn't even know there was a mosquito abatement district. Is there a fee for that?
Well, they don't. I just brought them up as a kind of district. But there are a lot of districts, park districts,
right.
Lighting districts. We have a lot of districts, and many of them tax us either on our property tax bill or as assessments.
Well, thank you for the suggestion, Bill, and suggest that you keep your ears open and look at how you can work with some of your neighbors about starting that political will.
Okay.
All right. Bye. Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, Bill's comment brought up something else that I wanted to say. We could use a lot more mobile home parks and trailer parks in the community.
Yeah.
They allow less expensive housing to be built. Hope's Village is trying to create a tiny home village,
right.
Which, as we just discussed, is basically a village of little trailers.
They look like little homes on wheels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very, very difficult to produce a mobile home park, a trailer park, or a tiny home village, both because of zoning and the financial cost of putting in all the infrastructure before the units get placed there.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a call here from Alice. Alice, question or comment? Alice?
Yes.
Hi. You're on
Hi.
The air. Hi. Did you have a question or comment for Jeff?
Yes, I did. And the gentleman before me had said something about the tiny home communities, and I was thinking of that too. But I live in Las Osas, and I back up to a 9-acre empty field. They were supposed to build new homes there, but apparently because of the water situation and the sewer mm-hmm. situation here, they haven't done anything. Mm-hmm. So here's a nice-looking piece of property with nothing on it except weeds and gophers and you name it.
Yeah.
And, why can't that develop into something? Why not even not a high rise but a low rise where you could have a number of families or a number of seniors or something like that that would help with this non affordable housing situation we have here.
Good question. We'll put that to the two pros here. Thanks, Alice.
Okay.
So in that particular instance, I believe water has been the big issue.
Yeah.
So I actually live in Morro
initially
Bay.
Initially it was sewer, now it's water.
And yes, and the last large development that was done out there was Monarch, close to the elementary and the golf course. And what they did is they developed their own sewage treatment plant in order to do that. And so they were able to offset their water use essentially because they were recapturing their own sewage and then providing water. So the golf course there is watered that way. So in that particular instance, it's resource scarcity, we'd call it. And mm-hmm. now that we've been working through that, that may actually develop. Bruce Gibson, the supervisor from that district, talks about growth eventually occurring in Los Osos again once we get the sewer and water situation stabilized, and we're heading in that direction.
Okay, so that one's going to start moving forward. Do you have any idea what was planned for out there?
Timeline, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
It's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a call from Dave here. Dave, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, you had a question or comment?
Yes, good discussion on the production side of things, and I have a question about the distribution side. It seems like the way to find a place to live is either go to Craigslist or go to one of the property management companies, because that's the main way to find rentals. Mm-hmm. And it seems like and about 80%, I would say, of the listings on Craigslist refer to property management companies, which all seem to follow the methodology of you pay a fee and submit an application, and that fee, of course, pays for your credit check. And then you're given a priority based on your credit rating. Well, given the problems that have happened in the past, many people have things that have happened with their credit rating, even though
right.
they currently have plenty of money available to pay for first and last month rent and whatever deposit. So is there a problem with the credit system where credit is preventing people from even being able to look at a house because they're prioritized? That's my question.
Thank you for that question, Jerry.
Well, I've always had some problems with the way that credit reports are scored. At one point, I was doing single-family mortgages, and I had a problem with young professionals who got very, very poor credit scores simply because they had student loans. And the fact that their student loan was higher after completion of college and working for a number of years than it was when they took it out, that dinged them. So because the student loans accrue interest, then that was as if they got rated as if they had missed payments for a long time. The credit scores don't take into account a lot of things like rent and utility payments. A lot of people just have problems because they don't have established traditional credit.
Right.
And so it's a real problem. Now, the other side of that is that landlords need an easy way, or management companies,
to screen
people.
Yeah.
And when you have 2 to 50 people applying for each apartment, the easier that screening is, the better it is from their perspective. So I don't know what a solution might be, but it is a problem.
Yeah. And I mean, did you want to say something to that, Jeff?
Well, I'm probably saying something that most of us know in this community, but San Luis Obispo proper, the city, of course, has such a high rental occupancy rate, or such a high rental rate versus ownership. It's almost 65% of the homes here
are
actually
rentals.
And it's just the inverse in the state. In the state, it's about 60-40 the other direction. And, of course, we know that the university exacerbates that problem. So rentals are part of that continuum of housing that we talk about. So it's important. I'm happy to see that the university has plans on housing more of their students up there on campus. I think hopefully that will help. But to speak to Dave's point, I think just now we're starting to see some of the foreclosures and things drop off of people's credit reports. I think that's probably at this point one of the lesser of the problems. It's just the scarcity of supply of rentals and the price themselves. Because even for a lot of folks, if they've got great credit reports, they still can't afford that property to rent.
And there are just so many, as you said, Jerry, that are applying for what small number of units are available, that if they're got any ding on their credit report, they're going to go to the bottom of the pile. It's really unfortunate. We have a John, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, John. Did you have a question or comment?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm a local, and I've noticed I like what he said about putting trailers out on people's ranches, but I think that we should lay off on more or less the campaign of come to San Luis Obispo, or San Luis Obispo is the happiest place in the country. I mean, you know, it used to be a great town. I mean, it is a great town, but it used to be small. Avila Beach was awesome, but now it's starting to turn into like L.A. And, you know, I've noticed that there's very few locals left. So we could lay off on the campaign of come to San Luis Obispo. I mean,
I think we're trying to get people to come here to visit, but unfortunately they like it and then they want to come back and live here. And
that's the problem.
Then they discover reality.
I mean, housing. I used to love Avila Beach as a kid. I mean, I don't even go there anymore. You can't even park.
Yeah, I know.
So,
yeah.
You know. And then how many locals, like real locals, do you even know that are in the area anymore? I know very few. I mean, everybody's from L.A. A lot of people are from the Valley up here. You know,
you're talking about young people who've tried to buy a home here or stay here to work and live.
Yeah. I think we should. Yeah, but we should lay off on the campaign of come visit us. That's what I think.
Yeah, so. I think you're getting head nods here.
All right. Hey, I got to go back to work. Thank you.
Thanks, Jan. Okay. So John says, no more touting the happiness thing. We're going to go to Sharon.
Hi.
Sharon, hi.
Hey, I caught your program and had lots of things that I probably won't be able to communicate well enough in the short time we have. But I'm just wondering, since your guests are, you know, so well-versed in the concept of housing concerns, they must have the history of... You know, I'm always wondering, why is it that we're just forced to create more housing for more people all the time? Like, what in the past has worked? Because just acting like we're expected ad nauseum, ad infinitum, to create more housing because more people want to come here just doesn't work. It ruins the quality of life. And it, at some point you can't absorb any more. And when you have resources that are impacted, like water, you know, like the streets that weren't designed for such heavy traffic and such, it's really frustrating because it seems like the developers are the ones that are more than happy to come in and make a ton of money, and then they don't necessarily live with what they created. And I don't want us to go up. That's the next thing that's probably going to happen, because I've been in some other communities along the coast in particular, and they run out, and so then they want to go up, and it just, it's an atrocity. It's hideous.
Well, let's let these two gentlemen take that. And thank you, Sharon. That's a good point.
So thank you, Sharon. This is Jeff. I represent the developers. And I can tell you, I appreciate the question because it gives me an opportunity to respond to really what is a false notion that there is rampant or unfettered development occurring on the Central Coast. It is simply not the case. And the resources and the future growth are taken into account very carefully in the general plans that are done with each municipality. And I'll give you an example of San Luis Obispo again. Right now we've got a population of about 45, 46,000, I believe it is, and build-outs at 57,000. And so really what we are doing now in terms of development, you see some really pretty large developments on the horizon. They won't be built or completed for the next 10 to 15 years, but you're seeing really the build-out of the city. Now, I live out in Morro Bay. Morro Bay is built out.
Mm-hmm.
We have very few places left to build there, so there will be some infill and just a little bit more building, but it's built out. So the point that I want to make is those issues are addressed via a public process within the general plan, and a builder just can't go out willy-nilly and overdevelop.
You know, and I think in also in response to Sharon's question too, because I think it is a teeter-totter, you know, and we are kind of walking that fine line. And even in a community like we have, there's also being able to retain the professionals that we need in the community to provide services. The physicians, the nursing personnel, the teachers, the Cal Poly and the Cuesta teachers, and housing for them is important too. As some are retiring, others need to move into the area. And so we've got just a real quick minute or two to wrap up. If you can give me some final comments, Jeff, on what you'd like to make sure you get across.
Well, thank you for having me in, and thank you to the callers that called in.
We had
a very active,
going,
active hour. It went by so quickly.
Wow.
So we are at a critical point in housing here on the Central Coast, and it's all about balance. I think somebody like Dave mentioned that, or John mentioned that we just need to stop letting people come here. Well, to a degree, that's right, because when we hit the general plan build-out phase, then that's it. But in the meantime, we need to make sure that we responsibly build and that we do it in a balanced fashion. And that is the goal and the aim of the developers here. They're really – sometimes they get painted as the big, bad, greedy developers. But honestly, that's not the case.
In about 30 seconds, Jerry?
Well, I've been a real advocate for more rental housing. Even though the city has a lot of rental housing, the rest of the county doesn't. Multifamily rental housing needs to be built throughout the county so that people who retire here from jobs here, people who have service jobs, our median income is very low, and they need housing too.
Okay. And I want to thank my guest today, Jerry Ryu, who is the executive director of San Luis Obispo Housing County Housing Trust Fund, Jeff Eccles, executive director of the Home Builders Association of the Central Coast, and everyone who called in with comments and questions today. And for those that couldn't get through on your line, thank you for being patient and holding. And we hope to hear from you next time. Next week, please join Fred Monroe. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. Your suggestions for future shows and topics are welcome. Please send them to voices@kcbx.org. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining me on Central Coast Voices.